Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Geek Roulette Podcast. I'm your ghoulish host, Mike Spriegel.
And I'm the ghastly John Lundquist. Happy Halloween.
It is Halloween week this week on the Geek Roulette Podcast, and this episode will be an arbitrary episode where we talk random Halloween things.
How long do you think it would take if we did the whole episode like that for everybody to just tune out?
I think it already happened.
Like 20 seconds and they're already gone?
20 seconds ago.
Yeah.
Somebody's on. Thank you for joining the latest episode. This is episode number 49 of the Geek Roulette Podcast. One episode away from our 50th episode, Spectacular.
Oh, yeah. We're just hitting our stride.
Yeah. It's not a very fast one, but we are. We're talking Halloween today or other assorted things. Just a open discussion because we're too lazy to talk about specific things. Actually, there's just not much going on in the geek world right now. There kind of isn't, but nothing it would almost be a category episode, but
yeah, maybe we'll do one of those pretty soon here. But yeah, it's almost like there's other things going on in the world that's preventing major geek news from coming out and stuff.
Yeah, no movies. Well, there are some other things going on. I can bring that up a little bit later, but yeah, well, you know what? Let's get the housekeeping done first. Hey, you're listening to this right now. Guess what? Review us on the platform you're on. Go ahead, leave us a nice juicy rating and tell us where your favorite podcast. And if we aren't your favorite podcast, just lie. Come on, you can do that for us.
Nobody's going to know any better. Who's going to go around to all the different podcast reviews and see if this person has said that on multiple podcast reviews? I mean, come on.
It's not like there's the podcast police going to come to your door and say, did you really like this podcast? I'm like, no, I didn't. You committed podcast perjury.
Yeah, they don't actually do anything. They just give you a dirty look.
It's no different from that fake review you left on Amazon.com for those sneakers you bought, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyhow, we're also on social media, Facebook and Twitter at Geek Roulette. So, join us on there. Moving on to things. Let's start off with our recommendations. Mr. John, what recommendation do you have?
I'm going to do kind of a hodgepodge here because since this is our Halloween episode, I can't remember if you've recommended it before. I know I have, but the Scared to Death podcast is one that if you haven't checked that out, you should. It's really good. I'm considerably further along than I was when I first recommended. I think I was only a couple episodes in then, and I'm almost caught up now. I think I've got like 6 or 7 episodes left, something like that. But just, it's really well done. It's spooky. It's creepy. It's scary. It's good stuff. It's perfect for this time of year and really any time of year. It's just entertaining. It's well done with, Dan Cummins, I think is his name, his last name.
Lindsay.
Yes, and his wife Lindsay do it, and they do a pretty good job. So that one. I also just finished up the audiobook this last weekend of Joe Hill's book, Heart-Shaped Box. I believe that's his first book, if I'm not mistaken, although I could be wrong on that. And it's a pretty good effort. I mean, it's, there's definitely some scary stuff in there. It's not like the best horror book you're ever going to read, but it's a nice, breezy horror book that doesn't get too in-depth. If you look for something to, play like the audiobook version like I did in your car or whatever. It's good stuff. You can definitely do a lot worse than it. So, I'll just stick with those two for now. I had a couple other things I could mention, but I'll leave it at that.
Hey, wait, I got a new complaint. Heart-shaped box, John. It's a Nirvana song.
Oh, yes. True that. Good call.
Yeah. Missed that one, huh?
Oh,
My recommendation in today's world, I think the problem is that we're burning through streamable material faster than it's being put out. There's still some things I should
speak for yourself there.
All right. Except for you. But here's the thing. Like there's things I do want to watch, but the problem is that, it's R or R rated or M rated. And if I'm with the kids, it's not like I'm going to expose them to that. So when you can find something that's not R or M rated that you can watch with the kids, hey, you know what? Go for it. So, all of that being said, one thing that I started watching with my youngest son. Now, I'm a fan of the original series, but the new one's actually pretty good. I'm one season into DuckTales, the Disney reboot of it that started 3 years ago. And they got 3 seasons in the bag, and I just finished season number 1. This might sound like blasphemy, but it's actually better than the original, which granted the original, there's a lot of nostalgia involved and everybody loved that. But here's the reason why the new DuckTales series is so much better than the original, in my opinion. One, you actually have an overarching storyline that is running from episode to episode where there's things going in the background that are moving along to a bigger plot. So that I always kind of like when you have that, whereas the original DuckTales, there really wasn't any consequences. Sometimes you had to have an episode where maybe something stuck, like, hey, look, there's Gizmo Duck or there's Bubba Duck, when they ever know they introduced a new character. But outside of that, nothing really ever showed any continuity in original DuckTales. This one does have some continuity. It's a very nice touch. They do a better job of establishing that Huey, Dewey, and Louie all have unique personalities, which is kind of nice. David Tennant voices Scrooge McDuck, does a great job on that. And really, it's a lot more clever than you would think, you know, when you watch a cartoon like that. The original one, as I said, entertaining in the sense that, like, when we look back, the nostalgic, I tried rewatching the original on Disney XD and it's okay. I mean, you have the beats and the song and stuff, but it really isn't an engaging cartoon. I find that the DuckTales reboot is actually kind of engaging, and I'm sitting there like, yeah, I kind of actually like this, and I would keep watching it with my kids. So I would definitely say the DuckTales reboot. They got 3 seasons under their belt, and it's currently all available on Disney Plus.
Nice. I remember when that came out, that was something I was going to check out, like, just because, you know, it looked pretty good and the art style was decent, but never got around to it. So maybe I'll have to look into that.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to our arbitrary list. Today's arbitrary list is going to be Halloween themed. I proposed the 3 most either weirdest or surreal horror beings, monsters, creatures in the movie, television, or whatever genre for the most part. And by that, everybody knows Dracula or the Wolfman and the Mummy. I mean, those are all just common staples. And even, like, you know, Jason Voorhees in some ways. What are the best, weirdest, like, non-linear ones out there? The ones that either have one shots or just odd in concept itself. So that's what I proposed. I'll start. The first one I want to say is this. In the 80s, there was a movie that came out. In the 80s, I almost feel like it was somewhat easier for, like, really cheesy movies like this to get made in the 80s, just because I'm sure they found cheap ways to make the budget. And, like, back then, it's like, hey, like, video stores, as an example, really thrived, because you put it out, even if it doesn't make money in the theater, odds are it'll make money in video. Movie I'm going to say, or creatures I'm going to say that were part of this one-off movie, is the Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Imagine very weird, grotesque-looking clowns that capture people and drain and siphon them of their blood. It is such a weird-ass, you know, movie. It is kind of scary because it all looks kind of grotesquely odd, but there is always something about that just kind of stuck out to me, so I'm going to say the Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah, I remember that one being one of the staples whenever you go to the video store, you know, in the 80s, early 90s. You know, the covers would just always stare back at you. That's one that definitely stuck with me. I'm going to caveat mine with, I have not seen any of mine because I've never been a huge horror person. I mean, back in the day, it wasn't that I was scared of them or anything. It's just, I don't know, it wasn't a genre I ever really watched a whole lot of. And even nowadays, like, my wife is definitely not a horror person, so whenever I watch horror movies now, it's something I've got to kind of catch, you know, when she's out of town or, you know, going to bed early or something like that. So mine are just more just observational, you know, things I've seen and whatever. The first one I'm going with is kind of from that same era, and that is the Killer Tomatoes. I think the movie was actually called Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, and I want to say there are a couple sequels.
There was The Killer Tomatoes, and then Revenge of the Killer Tomatoes. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes was early 80. I want to say 88 was when Revenge of the Killer Tomatoes came out.
But yeah, and that was just another one. I think it had like a cartoon cover on it, the front of that VHX box, if I remember right. And it was one I never saw. Just I remember thinking just it looked just ridiculous. I mean, just even just the name Attack of the Killer Tomatoes just seemed kind of odd, much like, you know, Killer Clowns from Outer Space and probably quite a few others that have been forgotten to the likes of us. I'm sure there's people that remember them because, you know, people like everything. But yeah, Killer Tomatoes, just kind of an odd concept and, you know, yeah, weird.
I'm going to say that I saw both those movies. The first one, in kind of a weird cult kind of way, it's an amusing movie just because of the premise itself, but it's not really a rewatchable movie. The second one is absolute garbage, and by all means, I would strongly recommend not watching it.
Yeah, and that, and to be fair, like both of those and the Killer Clowns and a bunch of others, like I know there is like almost a subgenre of just like goofy, weird kind of comedy horror type stuff, which, you know, these obviously belong to, but, you know, here we are.
The Tromaville movies, like the Toxic Avenger, right?
Yeah.
My second choice I'm going to throw out there. This was introduced to me in the 80s. I read the book at an age that was probably far too young to read the book in the first place. And if you really want to have a character that's just going to stick out and just be this all sinister, weird, evil being, I'm going to go with Pennywise the Clown from the book It, as well as the movies It, based on Stephen King. That was like one of those things when I read when I was, you know, about 11, 12 years old, that kind of just messed with my head. I'm like, holy crap. And just how brutal and just psychological of a killer it is, while also being supernatural, and how it just knew how to prey on everybody's just worst fears itself. So I'm going to say Pennywise the Clown.
Nice. Good call. I remember, I've never read the book. I saw the miniseries back in the day, but haven't seen that. That's
horrible. The only good thing about that miniseries, the original one, is Tim Curry as Pennywise. You take him out of the equation, it's horrible.
But come on, John Ritter's in that one, isn't he?
Oh, gee, John Ritter from Three's Company. You know what? I shouldn't speak ill of him. He passed away. But then again, wait a minute. That's kind of what we all do. He tragically passed away. Not in the sense that, hey, he wasn't supposed to pass away and John Ritter was a Highlander.
He was. He maybe was. Who knows? You never know.
No, because there can only be one. And obviously, he's not the one.
No. But yes. My next one I'm going to go with is Leprechaun. It's another kind of one of those infamous 80s movies. And again, maybe he'd be a little bit more terrifying had I actually seen the movie, but it's just kind of hard to imagine a leprechaun being this fearsome foe that's going around killing people. I mean, I suppose maybe he could like bite you in the shins or, you know, give you a nice groin punch or something. I don't know, but it just doesn't seem too menacing. But again, maybe had I seen the movie, I would think so. It just seems like an odd concept. Like somebody's sitting around the table and they're like, hey guys, we need to make this movie. What do we want the, you know, evil monster to be? And they're like, how about a leprechaun, guys? And they're like, okay, well, I want to go home. So sure, we'll make it a leprechaun. Yeah, just an odd choice. Leprechaun.
John, he had magical powers and you can make like weird things happen and like make bad wishes come true. It's Leprechaun. Do you know who was in the first Leprechaun movie, John?
I do seem to recall that there's somebody famous in there, but I don't know who it is off the top of my head right now.
It was Jennifer Aniston.
Nice.
Yeah. Actually, the first one was kind of more of a horror movie, and then the other one just became kind of subsequent comedy movies, almost kind of like Friday the 13th, where the earlier ones were scarier, and then the later ones just seemed like, what cartoonish thing can Freddy do now? But yeah, I mean, once you got like, I would say one that you should watch just because of how downright messed up and goofy it is Leprechaun in the Hood.
The one that I hear seems to be on everybody's list of just horribly bad horror movies is, what is it? Isn't it Troll 2? Isn't that the one? Isn't there even like a documentary on that one?
Yes. Troll 2 is also just, once again, so weirdly and poorly made, and yeah. So, John, what theme did my first two choices have?
They were both clowns.
Right. So that would mean my third one would also involve a clown. Now, an honorary mention, I almost thought about the puppets from the Puppet Master movies because those were just so weird and bizarre. So that gets the honorable choice. But, John, what last clown do you think I would have topping the list?
The one with the coat hanger that's standing at the end of the alley.
John, that's an inside joke that nobody else is going to get.
I'm okay with that. I don't know. What other clown is there?
The one that first turned me off to clowns and made me think how amazingly evil they can be. So 1980 or 81, maybe 83. It was around there. Movie came out, and it was about, you know, scary things going on in a house that people moved into, built on an Indian burial ground. The movie was called Poltergeist. And one element of the movie is that one of the kids, the house is being haunted by a poltergeist that's making strange, weird, evil things happen. It starts out playful at first. Eventually, it's then trying to kidnap the daughter of the family, you know, to make it stay with them. And eventually they fight back, and then the house really fights back. And one element of the movie is that there is a toy clown that is in the son's room. He doesn't really like that clown too much. And let's just say the poltergeist eventually uses the clown to basically stalk and bait, try to screw with the kid and try to capture him. And it is one of the most just weirdest, most messed up things. That was what turned me off the clowns in the first place, realizing that they are just evil avatars of Satan that'll eventually get us all. But it is the clown puppet toy from Poltergeist, which is iconic. If you were to type poltergeist and clown, you will see that easily, just a whole Google page littered with this, and how everybody probably hates that clown so much. So that that finishes my clown trifecta, is the clown from Poltergeist.
Nice. And that was even just in one of the episodes of Scared to Death I was listening to not too long ago. Oh yeah, there he is, clown poltergeist. He's kind of a goofy looking guy.
Oh yeah. Especially like the way the scene unfolds is that there's a storm, and his parents told him, like, the, you know, best way to know a storm is like coming and going is like after the lightning you count. And that's how many miles away the storm is from the lightning to the, or thunder, and, or, you know, all of that. And he's like counting, and then he looks at it and he sees the clown on chair, and then he turns and the clown's gone.
Oh, no. The first picture that shows up in the image search is like, looks like the clown's trying to break the kid's neck.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, it is trying to restrain the kid and maybe strangle him. John, have you never seen Poltergeist?
I have not.
Oh, Jesus Christ, John.
Hey, I told you, I haven't seen a whole lot of horror movies. It was definitely a no-go, like, in the house as I was growing up, because, you know, my darn near puritanical parents growing up. And over the years, just hasn't been something I've seen before. It's definitely on my list of like horror movies. And I was thinking I kind of wanted to watch a horror movie this week before Halloween hit. So
I would
maybe, that one.
That one right there is not what I would consider a traditional horror movie. I think it's almost like where like ghost movies kind of almost became kind of modernized and mainstreamed. And then after that, you had tons of like ghost and poltergeist movies that would happen. There's other poltergeist movies in the series too, but they are not any good.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that one later this week. We'll see. Time will tell. My third one, I've actually also got an honorable mention one. I was going to say the shark in the Jaws 3D movies, just because the special effects in those things are so bad. There's clips out there. You should go watch them. And my actual third one is also a shark, so, you know, if we're going to stick with themes that we're doing here, and that is Sharknado, which I don't know if technically you would call that a horror movie or a disaster movie or what it would be, but just the sheer absurdity of it all, which is, you know, again, maybe the appeal to it, like we were talking about the horror comedy whatever genre earlier, but just like, how are, you know, I mean, unless there's like water in that tornado, how are these sharks surviving? And what's, you know, does the tornado just randomly appear on top of people, which are, to be fair, are probably questions that would be answered if I had actually seen the movie. But just from an outsider's perspective, it just seems so ridiculous that I have no desire whatsoever to watch it. So Sharknado and, you know, I suppose 2 and 3 and however many of those silly things they ended up making. Yeah, that's my other last one.
In all reality, there has been, of course, proof that during hurricanes that like fish or larger, you know, sea creatures have been, you know, spun around in the air. So it's not unfeasible.
No, but just the fact that it's going to like kill you or whatever is, you know, I mean, granted, if a tornado drops on top of you, yes, it's probably going to kill you. But, you know,
I don't know if tornado is a proper term, though. Really, you should almost have like hurricane, you know, but there's not a way that you can have a good alliteration with that or a good way of meshing hurricane and shark.
Yeah, Sharknado doesn't work quite as good as Sharknado.
Nope. There was, I don't even know this backstory, how the movies came to be, but I like to think there was a guy in a bar who was just drunk off his ass, and he had to come pitch like a movie the next day to like some like B-rate studio, and he's just writing down garbage on like, you know, his napkin, and the next day he wakes up hungover, and he has like 20 minutes to get to the meeting, so he's just going there, and he pulls the napkin out, and he's just going through a list, and then like Sharknado's on there, like, that's it? That's what I got, and I gotta run with it, and...
Yeah. Something ridiculous like that, I'm sure.
Right. All right. Well, let's move into the Halloween arbitrary aspect of the episode. So, yeah.
First thing, Disney Plus is streaming Poltergeist, which seems like an odd choice.
Actually, that is a stream. Well, there you go. You have access to it.
Well, it's also on Netflix. So I'm wondering if the Disney Plus thing is like a typo here or something weird, because that's, you know, it says platforms, Netflix, Disney Plus, which... Netflix, okay. Disney Plus seems like a misnomer.
Well, Poltergeist is also, what, R-rated, or is it PG-13?
I don't know. It's entirely possible it came out early enough that it could be. No, it might have came out before PG-13 movies.
All right, just PG then. But, I mean, I assume you got that up, so.
I don't know. Let's see here. Poltergeist, Netflix. Let's see what it's rated here when I go in here. Oh, it says PG.
All right.
On the Netflix interface.
Well, that's why it could be on Disney Plus, because Disney Plus said they will never have any movie rated more than PG-13 on their channel. And then anything that would be over PG-13, they would have on Hulu.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. I'll have to check out on Disney Plus and see if it's actually on there, because that seems strange.
I suppose it does, but. Well, I mean, what, I guess here's the one thing I'll throw off. And if we're talking about Disney Plus, I mean, there's a lot of Halloween stuff they have on Disney Plus. And like one of the ones I found, if you want to see something bad, John, like there's a movie on there called Mr. Boogity and The Bride of Boogity. They're both like, remember when they used to have like Disney Sunday night movies or The Wonderful World of Disney?
And, yeah, back in like the 80s or whatever.
Right. And they had some like direct straight to TV movies they did. And they're pretty bad. But I remember watching them like when I was a kid, and I saw that them like, oh, let's see how bad they were. And they're just as bad as you think they would be in both special effects, plot. None of the characters in the movie are likable. You really want bad things. The funny thing, too, is the first Mr. Boogity movie has Christy Swanson in it before she kind of became famous. So, but one other movie that's on there, and it's a movie I've never seen, and everybody seems to talk about it like with weird cult-like reverence, and there's a lot of people I know that have been watching it recently for the first time and who didn't watch it and don't have the nostalgia attached, and they think it's horrible. That movie's Hocus Pocus. Have you ever seen Hocus Pocus?
I have not, actually. I actually just mentioned that to my wife the other day that I hadn't seen that, and I think she has, although I don't know that she spoke of it with quite the reverence that I know I've heard other people speak of it in.
I mean, there's a lot of people like, oh, Hocus Pocus, it's such a great movie. But then here's, I guess part of it is this. I mean, it came out early 90s. And it's not to say that there's not talent involved in there. You got Bette Midler in there, and she looks like, from all the images you see of the movie, she's mugging it up pretty hard. But it's also one of those things, like a lot of people said, yeah, if you grew up and you were like a teenager during, or like a kid or a teenager during that time, maybe the movie seemed much cooler to you then because of that. But, you know, when you watch it later, it's just not really a very engaging or good movie for the most part. There's a lot of movies kind of almost like that, where there's like a weird reverence to some movies. And then like, if you watch them at a later point or didn't grow up originally watch them, like another movie I don't really get the love for. Maybe I'll stand corrected. I get why people would love it, but I don't love it. And that's the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. And that's tough. I've seen that one. And my first wife was a big fan of that one. She did, you know, she worked on some of those midnight showings for it. And so I've seen it plenty of times because of her. And it's, yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I mean, I wouldn't say it's bad. It's just not really my cup of tea. I mean, it's, I can definitely see where it gets its cult following from, because it's definitely not for everybody, but it's, I don't know. It's well made, I guess. So it's just weird, cheesy kind of.
I think in like the late 70s, like early 80s, there were a lot of these like musical kind of movies that I think, and a lot of people have glommed onto them. Like Grease is another one where, once again, if you really look at the plot of Grease, it's such a horrible, shitty plot. And it's very just creepy some of the elements and plot aspects in there. But people like talk it as like this beloved, treasured, charming movie. But you have people talking about abortion and teenage, like, you know, pregnancy. And like, just again, it's like it's there's these weird glasses that go over it. Another one that I would say is not that bad, but I think it's maybe more respected because there's more musical artists involved with it. Be like The Wiz as an example. The Wiz, I think, you know, all right, if you're going to redo Wizard of Oz, they did actually a pretty decent job of it there. Or like Annie, but I mean, that was just, I think, how it was back then, where all these weird musicals and everybody's like, oh, man, these are such great movies and all such classics. And were they? I don't know.
For the time, maybe. I mean, but, you know, it's probably one of those when they came out, yeah, they were great. They were new. They were different. But, you know, over the 20, 30, 40 years or so later, it's just like, yeah, they're cute, but, you know, not necessarily the best now compared to, you know, some of the stuff we've gotten since then. I mean, like most mediums, I mean, you know, musicals are an evolving form, and what's quaint and awesome and unique at one time kind of, you know, doesn't necessarily always age well.
I think part of it is you have like where weird genres or what's going on at the time, culturally speaking. And you could say this, you know, I'll tie it back into Halloween. You could say this about such things like in the late 70s, you had disco. So you had a lot of movies that were kind of almost feeding into that. In the early 80s, you had a lot of people that were obsessed with like Broadway movies. You had like things like Fame or the really bad sequel to Saturday Night Fever called Staying Alive. And, you know, there was a weird obsession with that. And horror, that was almost kind of the same thing too, where like horror almost works in just weird, just waves. Because you look at your originators, you look at your Michael Myers, your Texas Chainsaw Massacre, your Freddy Krueger. And I think those were much more legitimately scary. And kind of tagging back when we were talking about earlier is that a lot of these movies that were horror movies eventually became almost comedy movies, where instead of it being about horror, it was like, what weird, wacky way are we going to find for somebody to die? And
yeah. You
know, and well, go ahead.
Well, I think that's the thing is a lot of those movies you mentioned were all like tend to be slasher horror movies. And I think the thing with those, and I'm not generally like the horror movies I tend to prefer don't tend to be the slasher ones. I mean, some of them are okay, but you know, not usually my cup of tea, but I think that's kind of the thing you get in with slasher things is that in order to make them bigger and better than the original and the next one, you've almost got to kind of keep going up and up and up. And eventually you just end up getting to where it's just this cartoonish, weird, you know, just almost like a parody of itself, you know, because just it keeps trying to top itself. That once you get into more and more sequels, which a lot of these, you know, the Friday the 13th, the, you know, Halloween, your, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street's all, you know, got pretty high up there in sequels, and they just ended up getting more and more ridiculous because I think they just had to keep topping themselves.
Well, and you know, again, when one, you know, one thing turns out to be good, and then what happens is then is like, well, let's just get it over the top. Like good example is you had like 83, 84 is when Gremlins came out, and when Gremlins was this big hit, and that a lot of people debate, is Gremlins a Christmas movie? Is it actually a horror movie? And a lot of, is it a comedy? And people's opinions go on that. But then after that, you had movies like Critters, you had Ghoulies, you had Chud, you had all these movies where like, well, let's come up with another weird, wacky creature. And that kind of like, you know, moved into like, hey, let's take what's successful and let's just milk it out. And it's not a surprising aspect of Hollywood itself. And eventually, you know, as horror evolved over a period of time, horror kind of almost took a rest, I think, in the early 90s, where it just kind of faded off. I think the reason why is just because you were getting a lot more action movies, which were a little bit more engaging. And it wasn't until probably you got to like Scream back in like 97. And that, I think, started the whole genre of the jump scare movie, where like, or not even jump scare, but just the teenage horror movies where, and then you had like all those copycats, and then you got almost more into the jump scares or then the self-found footage movies. There's always, I think, a genre out there that somebody does really well, and then you have everybody else just mimic and copy it. Like, you know, you have like a Paranormal Activity, and then all of a sudden everything's a found footage movie from there. And Scream, you had, yeah, teen heartthrob in there.
And now I'm not sure what the dominant horror thing would be, it's only, I almost feel like it's kind of evened out now, where you get a little bit of everything. I mean, you know, you'll still see every now and then a found footage movie. You'll see something that's more of a slasher thing. You know, you've got remakes out there, some of which are good, some of which aren't very good. You know, and then you get the more, I almost feel like lately it's almost leaned more towards, if anything, the artsy kind of, you know, artsy fartsy, you know, like, this is a beautiful picture and there's all this stuff going on, and it is this deep subtext. Like, I watched a month or two ago, I watched Midsommar, which is definitely in that thing. And after watching that, I kind of just decided those aren't necessarily my cup of tea either. Cause it's almost feels like it's too self-important, and it's more interested in just kind of being setting the scene rather than paying things off. Like, it just kind of was like, you know, hey, we're going to make this creepy and weird, and it's going to look really nice, and it's going to, you know, be really intriguing, and you're going to want to know what's going on, but we're not going to pay it off as well. The few that I've seen of them, at least.
Well, and you not being a fan of horror movies, like one that was made and then remade like decades later, The Wicker Man is an example. When I think the original had Roddy McDowall, and that one, again, I think Midsommar takes a lot from that. And then there was the remake of The Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage, and well, Christ, you just got Nicolas Cage. Yeah. What do you do? And you have the infamous Nicolas Cage bear suit punch as well, which is also equally.
Yeah.
But
and go ahead.
And I, you know, with those movies, I don't know if artsy is the best way to put it. I think we're over the past several years where horror has really been going is trying to take stories from reality or work more towards just overarching, like, I don't know, hauntings almost is probably the better way to put it. Like, you've watched The Conjuring, right?
I have not.
All right. Conjuring would be an example. And if you listen to, if you've listened to, obviously, Scared to Death, as you mentioned, a lot of the elements from the, I can't remember now what the, they've referred to like exorcist people, or what are their names?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't think of it either. They were just talking about the Annabelle doll is another one that they're in.
But a lot of those movies they've taken from sort of like the real life aspect, and they actually have a shared universe based on that. And you have a lot of other movies that are also similar to that, where, you know, haunted houses and stuff. I think you've seen a lot. I've seen a lot more of that over the past several years. It's just, you know, possessions or stuff like that. And again, it's because Conjuring did very well. And there's even like in the 80s, remember, or not 80s, like the 2000s, you had movies like The Ring as an example, you know, and you had a lot of those almost Japanese inspired horror movies. That
which one thing on The Ring, like, have you seen The Ring?
Oh yeah.
Like, and I would like to correct one thing. It's not that I don't like horror movies. I just don't get as much of a chance to see them, so I haven't seen as many. But I do actually like them when they're done well. For me, like that one, like when she comes out of the TV at the end, it was like, oh my God, that was so creaky. Like, for me, I was just like, that's like the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen. Like, it went the complete opposite way for me for whatever reason. I just did not have that reaction at all. And nowadays I see people like, oh, that was so scary. And I'm like, yeah, that it didn't work for me. What was your take on that?
I saw it more like when it originally came out, and I liked it. I thought it was an okay movie. I think part of it too is that maybe there was just more of a, the better way to put it is more of a blinder ignorance to it. The internet wasn't as established as it was, where a lot of things could be spoiled. And I think now with a lot of horror movies, you got to be a lot more clever and smarter how to go about it. Back then, I think movies like that worked. It's like the Blair Witch Project. The Blair Witch Project, I think, worked very well because nobody was really used the internet, and they used the internet as a tool to sell the movie to make it feel like it was based on real events. When you rewatch the Blair Witch Project, it's more boring now because you know it's fake. It's one of those movies that only could have worked maybe in its time because people didn't know if it was real or fake. And once you know it's not real, then it really just destroys a lot of it. Because otherwise, the Blair Witch Project is an hour and a half of people just yelling in the woods because they lost the fucking map. And
I think it's one of those movies. I think if you show it to somebody who has no idea what it is, it could maybe work. But I think like you said, I think once you know that it's just a bunch of people lost in the woods, that's basically all you see is it's a bunch of actors lost in the woods.
Well, and I think the other aspect of a Blair Witch Project is that there's not really a mystery to it. They try to build a mythology around it, and some of the mythology itself can be a little bit interesting. Like, oh, all right, that's cool. This happened. But it's also, I think, standard horror movie fare where you kind of have to build some of the stuff up and to, you know, you get to your end. Like, it's, if you rewatch the movie, there's not a really a lot of rewatchability. There's not like, oh, I'm picking up on things that I didn't notice before that are clues that feed into it. Maybe the better way to put it is it's not like the usual suspects where when you get to the end and find out about Kaiser Soze, you rewatch it and you're watching almost in a new lens, knowing that, oh, man, everything I thought I knew, and you started like picking out little pieces here and there. There's some movies like that, you know, same thing when you watch a movie like The Prestige. Once you get the ending and you know what the big spoil is, you rewatch it, but all of a sudden then it's like, oh, now things, you start picking up on things that, you know, now make more sense. There's, you know, Memento is another one like that too, or when you watch the movie and it's all out of order, but when you start piecing it back into order, it makes perfect sense. So,
yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, definitely kind of a unique way of looking at some movies, and some it works well for and some not quite so much.
Yep.
So now getting back more into, let's try and put a more of a, I don't know, real. So what is your take on like real world? Like, you know, listening to Scared to Death, do you tend to believe that paranormal stuff? Are there ghosts out there? Is there something to some of that? What's your take?
I would say this, like some of the stuff that they have on there when it comes down to ghosts or supernatural things, you know, there's a lot of people that would say, well, no. And the one thing that, you know, and there's some people say yes. And I think the one thing that Dan Cummings does very well on that show is that when he prefaces that, you know, and him and Lindsay have said before, is that, do we believe this? It's like, not necessarily. They go at it with a skeptical look, but they also realize that out of all those stories, if one of them is true, that's still an amazing thing to keep in mind. And I think I tend to have a little bit more of a sense of wonder and awe, in the sense that, is there things or oddities out there that can't be explained? And the answer is yes. Maybe in like 200 years, some of this stuff could be explained more, and maybe there is an actual science that's actually behind it, which helps explain it. Yeah. So, you know, to say that, hey, no, there's no such thing as a ghost, that's fine. I can understand why some people would be skeptical, because for some people, they've gone through everyday life and events, and they've never seen or anything like that. But I'm also one of those people too, that, like, there's times, like, especially when I used to work overnights and I would walk home from work in the middle of the night, you walk past that light post that turns off for some reason right when you're walking past it, you know, and you sit there and think, oh, crap, is something going to happen? Did I do that? And I think all of us, most people in general, believe that there is something bigger or different out there that hasn't been explained, that doesn't, you know, nobody knows really anything about. So, you know, I would say that, am I skeptical? Yeah, I could say I'm skeptical, but I'm also skeptical in the sense too that I'm also still open-minded more than enough to realize that, yeah, just because something hasn't been proven right now doesn't mean it's not going to be proven later.
Yeah, that tends to be kind of the way I think it is. I think there's way too much stuff out there to, you know, for me to say absolutely no, there's no way this is true. I think there's too much stuff that's happened. Yes, you know, a lot of it can be explained away, you know, with one thing or another, I think, but I think there is, you know, some of it can't be, and some of it's, you know, like just the sheer volume. I mean, like you said, they say in Scared to Death, you know, it just takes one of these stories to be true, and then who knows what else is possible, you know. And then the other thing they mentioned on there too, that you kind of brushed on, is that, you know, hundreds of years ago, they thought disease was caused by spirits and ghosts and stuff. Then science finally got to a point where it could recognize that, you know, no, it's not, you know, that you're possessed by demons. It's that you have bacteria or viruses or whatever it is, you know. So who knows, maybe 50, 100, 200 years in the future, like you said, we'll finally get science. We'll get to a point where it's like, oh, hey, this stuff that we thought was ghosts, well, maybe, you know, maybe it is actually ghosts. Now we can see what it is. Or maybe it's this other thing that, you know, is completely not related at all, and it's this other thing just manifesting as something that we see as ghosts, you know, but we're clearly obviously not at that point right now.
Well, and I think a good arc bridge way to it, way to look at, you know, whether something could be possible or not. Because if you listen to the Scared to Death episode where they talk about the old, like, European town with the vampires.
I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar. I don't think I've gotten to that one yet.
You'll be coming up to that one pretty soon. But they talk about, you know, a town with vampires and about, you know, drinking blood and stuff. And part of it is, well, that's not possible. But, you know, one thing that if you were to say is possible, you know, we talk about one genre that's very popular is zombies. And if you were to say, would zombies ever be possible? Scientifically, it could be possible. I mean, essentially, you know, what if there was something else that can make scientifically make our bodies move and react, but in a more baser instinct? You know, so there's things out there I think that are possible. It's just that they're not everyday happenstance, and maybe it's a good thing. That'd be a worse aspect of like every day. It's like, well, am I going to work today? Well, according to the news, vampires on a rise. Well, damn it. Like, I didn't stock up at garlic at the store.
Yeah. So have you had anything happen to you that you would say is, you know, potentially paranormal?
Man, I don't know. I always was a much more superstitious child. So I can look back in a different lens now and say, yeah, there was probably explanations for some of the stuff that I dealt with. I think for me, nothing in a supernatural sense. I'm always much more scared about, you know, I think serial killers and things along those lines. Like when I lived in Woodbury, we had like, I live there kind of right now, but when I lived where I originally lived in the Woodbury, when I grew up here, like 20, 30 years ago or so, we had 3 acres of land. I had no neighbors by me. So like we had like long, you know, long fields with tall grass. So nothing messes with your head more when you're 10, 11 years old and the windows open, there's a windy day and you hear nothing but wind brushing and you sit there and think, what if somebody was out there, you know, and what if somebody, you know, wants to do intent and harm to you? And even now doing the job I do right now, where I'm like going into places and areas like at 3-4 in the morning, what I do, I always have like my head on a massive swivel, just always aware of my surroundings. You know, I think that's always my bigger, more realistic fear, is that there's people out there that either take pleasure in doing harm or want to do harm for gain. And that right there, I think, is something that scares me more, and I have much more cognizant awareness. But I can't think of a time I sat there and thought, oh man, something's going to go ahead and like kill me and it's a ghost or it's a monster or anything like that.
Yeah. The only one I've got one, and it's fairly vanilla. You'll be familiar when I say that another friend of mine and I were going to the Outback. This is probably where, you know, I don't know, 20 years old, maybe, you know, maybe 19, somewhere in that age.
I just want to clarify, he's not referring to the Outback Steakhouse.
No, nor the Outback in Australia. The Outback was basically, it was this heavily wooded area, kind of back by the Mississippi area. There were some trains that kind of went back through that way. It was kind of a creepy as hell area if it's not something you were familiar with. Like if you were to go back there, well, I don't know what it looked like if you went back there now. But it was kind of genuinely just a creepy place. Like, I mean, you'd find all sorts of trash back there. I mean, there, you know, I'm sure there are homeless people back there quite frequently, but we were, you know, stupid young kids. We went back there all the time and we built fires and we'd, you know, hang out and screw around and, you know, be kids. And there, you know, we'd go back there in the middle of the night when it was pitch black without batting an eye. But there was one time myself and this other friend were going back there and we were going to build a fire and do whatever, like we usually did. And we got like halfway back there and all of a sudden, like, I don't remember what set it off, but I kind of just looked over at him and was like, you know, do you feel just like weird? And he kind of looked at me. He's like, yeah, like there's like this weird presence in the air. And neither one of us could really explain it. We're like, do you want to just get the heck out of here? And we did. We just ended up just turning around and leaving and, you know, did something else. But like, it just sticks with me to this day. There was just this weird feeling, especially having listened to so many of the, you know, the scared to deaths where people talk about, you know, they'll tell the stories of people doing the same thing, only they don't turn around. They keep going and something, you know, weird happens, something crazy. So I'm kind of glad we did, because who knows what would have happened. I mean, you know, it's entirely possible nothing would have happened. But I definitely, you know, when I hear those stories about, you know, that we were in this place that we've been 1,000 times and then it just suddenly didn't feel right. That was, you know, about all I can say about it, is it just didn't feel right. Cause we'd go back there all the time, like I said, and didn't bother us a bit. For some reason, this one time there was just this odd aura and we just, yeah, we got the heck out of there.
Yeah. I think the last time I felt any true feeling of fear or dread was when I used to live at your house in the Blair Witch Room, John.
Yeah, the Blair Witch Room was downright creepy.
John, the Blair Witch Room.
Yeah, the Blair Witch Room in my old house that we actually just sold. I'm not even sure if it's sold yet, actually. That's a whole other story. But down in the basement, it was the room that had like our furnace and our water heater and stuff. And just these you know, it basically looked just like the Blair Witch Room at the end of the Blair Witch, you know, movie.
Or Mike is just standing in the corner and all of a sudden, like, you're dead. Yeah. The camera falls.
And yeah, it just had, you know, just cinder block walls and everything. And it was just creepy as heck. And just, you know, concrete floor. Just, yeah. And it was, I think you were the one that dubbed it the Blair Witch Room.
Yep. Well, I walked in there and it looked like you could, like, walk into that room. It's like, man, I bet you bad things happened here. Really bad things.
Yeah, very possible. We never had anything going on in that house. Then eventually we finished the basement and the Blair Witch Room became our walk-in closet.
Yeah, good for you.
Yes.
So one thing I'm going to talk about, it's just weird level of, I think, tradition, I guess. So one thing that some people are up in arms about is because, look, traditionally, for God knows how many years, almost 40 plus years, the Charlie Brown TV specials would always be shown on ABC or CBS. One of the two. I want to say ABC because I think CBS had Rudolph and Frosty when it came to Christmas. But this is the first year they're not going to be because Apple bought the rights to them and now Apple's going to show them on Apple TV. They're not going to have where we have to pay to see them. They're only going to have it where the programs are available for a short period of time between like 3 or 4 days around the holiday itself. But you have to go through Apple TV to be able to watch it. And some people are like, oh no, they took away, you know, Charlie Brown, you know, it's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. And now I got to do this and it's evil corporations. And part of me, I just sit there and all the people grousing about it. It's like in today's modern day and age, who's still watching like network TV? Now, granted, there's a lot of people. I remember growing up, that was something that probably me and you both did is like, we would check the TV page. It's like, oh, hey, you know, the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown's going to be on this night and you would like watch it or so. But as time has gone on, like either you're going to digitally purchase it or buy the DVD or do whatever you can to watch in a different way. Really, why would people get mad about something like that? We're just moving. I think it's tradition. It's people hate change and like, oh, how come this evil corporation bought it? Well, what's ABC? ABC is owned by Disney. So you're mad that Disney lost Charlie Brown and it went to somewhere else?
Yeah, I remember seeing those headlines last week or the week before, and it was just kind of like, at first I kind of had the gut reaction of, oh, that's too bad. But at the same time, like you said, I was like, yeah, but who cares? Like, it's not like I was going to tune in on Thursday night to watch it at 7:30 and sit through commercials. I mean, I think there's one of them I think we bought a couple years ago. I don't remember if it was the Halloween one or the Christmas one that we bought on iTunes or something, so we can watch it whenever the heck we want. It's like, you know, I'll just pay $10 or whatever, and then I've got it digitally for quite a while. And, you know, yeah, it's not the end of the world, people.
Well, I think the other aspect of it, too, is this, is we watched growing up because Charlie Brown was kind of still a prevalent thing back then. Is it still a prevalent thing right now where people, like, is there kids out there that know who Charlie Brown and Snoopy or any of those, you know, characters are? And I think for us, it's a little bit different. For us, we live in Minnesota, and being in Minnesota, that's the birthplace of Charles Schulz, who was the creator and artist of the Peanuts cartoon where Charlie Brown originated from. Like, matter of fact, if you go around the metro area of Minnesota, there's statues of Lucy and Charlie Brown that were a limited special thing that they had at various landmarks of, you know, our St. Paul metro area for that. But I mean, outside of that, really, is there right now an 8-year-old kid that's like, man, I want to watch Charlie Brown? I think parents might show it to the kids and say, hey, this is what I used to watch when I was, you know, your age and everything. But I don't know if it's going to have the same impact because of it's 40, 50 years old and it's harder to maybe relate with what was going on at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I know my kids know who, you know, they all are. And I think, you know, partially because obviously, like you said, we're from the area. But like, we've shown them at least, I think, the Halloween and the Christmas specials. And I remember them liking them, but at the same time, they're not chomping at the bit like, oh, we've got to watch them. You know, like, I'm sure if I mention it this week, like, hey, guys, we should watch the, you know, Charlie Brown Halloween thing. They'd probably like, oh, yeah, cool, let's watch it. But it's not like something that they're, for them, that they're looking forward to. You know, like you said, it's something that we introduced them to. You know, have shown them, you know, like they know who most of the characters are. I think they watched that movie that came out a few years back. But yeah, I mean, it's not appointment TV like that. It's just becoming less and less of a thing, you know. Like, I mean, it's pretty rare that it's, you know, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to sit down and watch, you know, any show at a given time. You know, pretty much everything I watch nowadays is streaming. The only time I sit down to watch something like with a schedule, it's a sports thing, you know, it's like a baseball game or a football game, something that you can't, you know, that you, you know, almost need to watch live as opposed to, you know, at some point. Whereas, you know, I can fire up The Grinch Who Stole Christmas pretty much anytime I want, or Charlie Brown, or any TV show, you know. I mean, that's, you know, it's almost a detriment to have to sit down like, oh God, I got to strap myself to TV at, you know, 7:30 on Friday and watch my show. It's, you know, it frees you up more to be able to not have to do that.
Well, I think part of it too is this, is that when it comes to like children entertainment properties, I think there's been so many things that have come and gone over the past few decades. And now I think there's even a greater push of always having what the next best thing is. Like, you think about things that we watched when we were younger, and the only one I could say has tried doing a decent job of reinventing itself, at least modernizing itself as time's gone on, is the Muppets. I think the Muppets have always tried to be a bit more smarter and savvy about how, you know, hey, how do we make the Muppets work in this current time and period? And, but outside of that, you know, there's very few things I remember from our childhood that, you know, if you were to go back to the early 80s and tell, like, you know, people like, man, in even like 4 years, nobody's going to give two craps about the Smurfs. Like, no way, the Smurfs are one of the biggest things out there. And now, sure, they had some movies that were rebooted, but again, those, when they do that, I don't, it's not necessarily nostalgia for, it's more nostalgia for the adults that grew up that way. They'll make their kids watch it like, this is what I watched when I was younger. But the kid watches a Smurf movie and it's like, all right, cool, whatever. It's like, you see that guy? That guy's Doogie Howser. Like, who the hell's Doogie Howser? Let me get back to playing Fortnite. Shut up, Dad.
You know, yeah, but it's a different world, I think. I mean, like, back when Charlie Brown and all that stuff came out, there wasn't as much stuff to grab your attention. So when something like Charlie Brown came out with a Christmas special, it was a big deal, because like, that was maybe the one new Christmas special that came out that year. And, you know, maybe, heck, maybe even for a couple of years. Whereas now you've got so much stuff coming at you from every angle that it's hard to grab attention like that. I mean, you can't just, you know, you can put something out and yeah, maybe it gets popular, but it just doesn't have the draw that those things do, just because back then, I mean, that was pretty much all you had. So you didn't have a whole lot of other things vying for your attention.
Yeah. I mean, back then it was just TVs and movies, maybe some other little things here and there, but those, I, you know, maybe had a better shelf life, but they still had a shelf life. There's things back then in which, you know, it was very difficult for things to transcend, you know, different generations. Nowadays, with the way the internet's going at this point, you know, with YouTube and other, you know, forms of streaming, yeah, there's so much competition out there that, you know, oh no, we don't get to watch Charlie Brown this year. That's more, I think, heartbreaking for parents or people our age, for certain people, than it is ever going to be for any kid.
Yeah, I think it's just sign of the times of things moving on. Like, oh no, Charlie Brown's not on anymore. I mean, next year maybe it'll be the Grinch or something else. I mean, you know, it's the way things are going. I mean, at some point 20 years from now, I mean, network TV might not even be a thing. They're probably all going to eventually just convert over to streaming.
It's an IP. It's content. That's what it is. Hey, you know what? If we want people to watch this, you know, they're going to watch it on our service. And, you know, people get mad like, oh, Disney's doing this. No, you know, this company's doing this. But that's the name of the game nowadays. The one like streaming channel that maybe has some things to be interested in watching, but I sure as hell ain't going to do it, is like CBS All Access. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to watch like a new Picard show because I wasn't that big of a Star Trek. I'm interested about the Stan miniseries, or the Stan series on there. But again, ain't going to pay money for, you know, just that. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, there have been a few things on there and some of the other streaming ones that it's like, yeah, it's okay, but I don't need to shell out another, you know, $8 to $10. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
There was a weird silence there.
That's what I said, dead silence.
Craziness. Dead.
There you go. That's the supernatural thing, John. That's a story that's going to keep you up all night.
Yes. Dead silence. Why haven't there been a movie called Dead Silence?
I'm sure there has been. Look it up.
There probably has been.
I'm sure that sounds like the perfect title for like an 80s horror movie.
Let's see. Oh, yep, there is. It's a ventriloquist.
Oh,
from 2007.
That makes perfect sense there.
Yes, with a bunch of people in it that you've never... Oh, Donnie Wahlberg is in it. It grossed over $22 million worldwide. There you go. Dead Silence. It's about a puppet.
Donnie Wahlberg.
Yeah.
There's only one thing that Donnie Wahlberg has done that I've actually thought was any good.
Wahlberger?
No, that's Mark Wahlberg, first of all, not Donnie.
I think it's all three of them.
It might be, who cares? But I go to like Hy-Vee's in our area, which is a grocery store chain, and they have Marky Mark's like burger chains in there, and I'm like, whatever. No, I think he did a really good job in Band of Brothers. And outside of that, yeah. The only other thing, like I know he's like on some sort of CBS procedural show, if I'm right, which whatever, everybody's on one of those at one point or another. He was also in The Sixth Sense, another horror movie, I guess, if you could, where he was the guy that killed Bruce Willis.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was in Blue Bloods. That's the one you're thinking of.
That's probably it. Once again, it's a CBS procedural. They're a dime a dozen.
Yeah, pretty much. That one is Tom Selleck, though.
Oh, Magnum P.I., which everybody's like, oh, who knows? CBS did Magnum P.I., and he wasn't in it. I'm like,
yeah, whatever.
Pushing your damn nostalgia. I mean, I'm going to get my cane and go suck on a piece of hard candy, because that's what people my age do.
Hell yes, we do.
Even that reference to a kid, like, what? What are you talking about? Like, hey, here's a thing that's not Halloween related, but I saw a post on Facebook from like a group I'm part of, and I'm wondering what you think about this. Somebody posited, what if Batman and Superman switched cities? What would the crime situation be like in each of those cities?
Yeah, I saw that too. I don't know if it was in the same group or if it was just something that was floating around for a bit.
Might be, but it's an interesting thing. Like, you have Batman who's doing this grim, gritty fight in Gotham, where Superman's kind of in Metropolis. He's fighting crime, but maybe on a more grander scale. I don't know.
I Batman being in Metropolis, I can't imagine he would change much, just because Batman tends to be more street level crime fighter. Whereas I don't think, I mean, there's obviously some street level crime going on in Metropolis, but I don't think there's as much. You know, and the bigger criminals they do have tend to be these bigger, superpowered, you know. I mean, I think a Batman Lex Luthor face-off could be interesting, but, you know, you're not really going to throw a lot of punches in that one. Superman being in Gotham, I think.
Do you think he has the mental fortitude to handle the villains in Gotham?
I think he could. I think Superman's more with it in the head than, you know, you think. He's not...
But
you know,
I
don't think he would sink to their level. I don't think. I think he'd be able to keep it together and just be like, you know, Joker, you're pretty messed up, but you're going to jail, you know.
But I mean, that's just it, though, is that you're right. He's maybe a little bit more straight laced, and maybe it's different. We're like, yeah, he's stopping a bank robbery, or oh no, here comes like Toy Man. But I mean, what it's different where, hey, Joker just killed like an entire panel of, you know, jury. And how does Superman still maintain his optimism when he's dealing with that? Or let's look at it in another different angle here. Would you say the increase of villains that occurred in Gotham City was a direct reaction in proportion to Batman being there, whereas they existed because he existed and he kind of almost created his own enemies in some ways?
I think there's something to be said for that. I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, obviously the reason that these, you know, in the real world, the reason these supervillains didn't show up till Batman got there was because, you know, that's when they were created. But I think, you know, in universe, I think it could definitely be said that, you know, hey, these, you know, there's this crazy guy in a bat costume. Okay, I'm going to put on a, you know, penguins are going to be my thing. I'm going to be the Riddler. I'm going to be this clown, you know, and I think there's something to be said for that. I don't know that it would have stopped them from doing things. I think it maybe would have been less, what's the word I'm looking for? Like less cartoonish. It would have been, you know, more maybe realistic or something like that, or more reality based, whatever you want to call it.
I
think it still would have happened though.
I mean, I look at it this way. Batman was born out of trauma because of crime in his childhood, but now here he comes inflicting trauma on the villains of Gotham City. So then all of a sudden that trauma almost creates almost a vicious circle then, where those that are under the duress and fear that, hey, in order for me to be successful as a criminal, I need to go to a certain extreme, all of a sudden just keeps going in circles then, because it's like almost like an arms race. Whereas Superman, you're never going to one-up Superman in the sense. The only way you can hurt Superman is if you got kryptonite magic or you're hurting the ones he loves. And that's why, you know, with Lex Luthor, you know, Luthor, yeah, that's your good foil for him. Or, but I mean, again, if you have like basically Superman taking on like trying to, you know, stop, or he does stop like somebody like Mr. Zazz, you know, the serial killer who cuts marks on himself. How does Superman mentally maintain his optimism? It's different, you know, where like, oh, I'm fighting this epical big battle. But if he got street level, would it eventually turn Superman just more cynical, I guess?
I think it might have after a while, but not to the extent I think where it's going to change him on a fundamental basis. I think he's still, you know, he's maybe going to be a little bit more, you know, scarred from some of that stuff and just messed up and whatnot. But I think ultimately, I think his personality, I think, is going to pull through, and he's, you know, I mean, he's the ultimate optimist. I think he's going to see through that and he's going to push through, and it'll get to him here and there, maybe, where he's going to have days where he gets done. He goes home to Lois and he's like, God, Lois, I just, you know, don't know how much longer I can take it. But I think part of Superman being who Superman is he's going to push through that, and he's going to come through and, you know, do what's right.
And, you know, vice versa, you put Batman, would Batman's presence in Metropolis generate and create a darker, more sinister breed of criminal there?
I don't know that it does there, because I think Gotham is a different place where I think it tends to breed a certain mentality in people. So if you're going to do something in Gotham, you know, if you're going to be a criminal, you're going to tend to, you know, maybe veer towards that. Whereas I think the crime in Metropolis tends to be more, you know, just basic, generic. I mean, you know, you're not going to see as many villains like you do in Gotham, you know, like that's kind of one of the things, is Superman's not as known for his villains. Whereas it's arguable that Batman is just as famous as a lot of his villains, you know, I mean, so, but I don't think Metropolis tends to breed that same kind of crime that Gotham does.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yes, it is an interesting, you know, what do you want to call it, thought exercise, though.
Well, and I think that's the weird thing, is you have such two wildly contrasting, you know, heroes. And again, the difference between, you know, DC versus Marvel is that these are fictionalized cities where we're going to make this city the worst place in the world, where Metropolis is much more of an optimistical city. And then you look at like the Marvel universe, and everything always just seems to revolve around New York.
So now, what do you think would happen if you put Spider-Man in Gotham?
Oh,
with some of those same things, like, do you think like him facing up against Joker all the time and Mr. Zazz, and Spider-Man, I think, would get broken down. I think it would get to him after a while. He would kind of lose his not necessarily his mind, but I think he'd lose his way a bit. He'd either just stop doing it altogether, or he'd just, you know, something would go wrong there, I think.
Maybe part of it too is this: the contrast between Batman and Spider-Man is that Batman watched his parents, you know, get killed in front of him, and he used that to drive and push his vengeance. What makes Spider-Man maybe a little different is he had the ability to prevent his uncle's death, but his own arrogance and selfishness prevented it, and he learned a lesson. So would he take a different approach than Batman? I think you have the whole, you know, greatness breeds, you know, or response, you know, the whole, with great response power comes great responsibility aspect of Peter Parker, Spider-Man. But I think you're right. He does, I think, break down at some point, just because he's already carrying a burden with him, versus with Batman and Bruce, it's more, I think, about revenge and, hey, this isn't going to happen to anybody else. With Peter, it's almost like redemption, but at some point, he's just going to get carried in. And even when you take a look at Spider-Man's rogues gallery too, compared to, like, you know, Batman's, he's got almost an equally messed up group of villains that just constantly batter at him. And I think the only reason he hasn't become much more messed up is the fact that it's not just him. He's in a city where there's other heroes that have similar grudges against the villains that he fights. you know, it, the Kingpin isn't just mad at Spider-Man. He's mad at Daredevil and other characters too. And, you know, same thing with a lot of other characters. Granted, he has some exclusives like the Sinister Six, and you could say Norman Osborn, but, you know, I do think he would break down.
Yeah. And I do think there's one thing that kind of came to mind as you were talking, there's that, I think the thing with Batman, like you said, since he saw his parents die, I think part of his thing too, is that to him, like, it can't get worse than that. So I think anything for him, he's already seen the worst thing imaginable. He saw his parents die in front of him and bleed out in an alley. Whereas, you know, he's like, anything that, you know, the Joker, or any of these guys can do, it isn't going to top that. So I think that's kind of almost what keeps him going through some of that. He's like, you know, okay, yeah, you're messed up, Joker, but, you know, you're not as messed up as something I've already seen.
Well, that's awesome. Put another contrast between the two. Batman also inherited an entire fortune from his parents because they were amazingly wealthy socialites. Peter didn't have any of that. He's still struggling to make ends meet. So Peter going dark is probably going to be a much faster trip, just because with Batman, he doesn't have to stress or worry about resources. It's more or less, how far can I push myself? With Spider-Man, at some point, he's going to sit there and he's going to realize he can't maintain his regular identity. He's going to lose the Peter Parker self of him altogether, just because if he wants to continue this battle, it's going to be that bad.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting differences between the three of them.
Mm-hmm. So, what are you going to go for as Halloween this year?
I don't know. We're not going out and doing traditional trick or treating just because, you know, there's this COVID thing apparently going on out there.
Oh, do tell, what happened?
I know, crazy town, huh? It's like there's a pandemic or something out there. So we're having some of the
Panera bread. Yes.
Panera. Good stuff. Good soup. The kids' cousins are coming down. We're basically just going to do like a Halloween party type thing. So they're going to wear costumes. I don't know that I'm going to have one. I've got like, yeah, I don't even think I've got anything like in stock. Like costumes don't really, haven't been a thing for me just because I don't really wear them for Halloween itself. I work in kitchens. So kitchens aren't generally very conducive places to wearing costumes because costumes tend to have lots of dangly bits, which can catch on fire or fall in hot grease or all sorts of things. So yeah, I'm going to be boring and probably not do anything, I don't think, unless I get the urge to go out and get something at the last minute.
I don't know. For me, I would love to dress up and make Halloween this big thing. I would love to decorate my house as this amazingly spooky thing, but part of it is time. There's other priorities and things I need to work on. And I think the other part of it too is this, is just that costumes, like, unless you're making it yourself and want to put time into it, like going to stores, like you go to Target and you see like all these like costumes, or you look on Amazon. Like my wife, she normally tries to make my oldest son costumes. And this year she's like, I just don't have time. I can't do it. And we're going to probably do kind of a Halloween scavenger hunt around the house, you know, a la Easter in some shape and form. But my son, oldest, wanted to be Link from Zelda. And, you know, it's like normally she would try to put something together. She couldn't. So to buy like a Zelda costume, it's like 40, 50 bucks or so. And that's part of it, is you buy a costume from a store. It's like you're basically taking the path of least resistance, but you're paying like a horrible premium in tax. Like, hey, do you want to be Captain America? Sweet. Here's a suit you can give your kid. It already has padded muscles and all the accessories and stuff, but you're going to pay for it. And even if you pay for it, once you get the costume itself, it's like, yeah, he's going to look like Captain America, but all the costumes made out of like the cheapest material possible, like almost like a weird, like generic grade of felt. And the shield itself is like even much more flimsier than like generic, you know, plastic plates you would find at Walmart. And it's just this weird thing here. Like, I think one of my favorite costumes I ever made was a few years ago, where I just took like a giant white bed sheet. And then I took some felt and I cut out a bunch of black circles and I put it on the sheet and I cut out two relia holes and I went as Charlie Brown from the Charlie Brown Christmas. Simple, effective costume. The best part was, is like when I was taking my kids trick or treating, like one like parent just wigged out and like, oh my God, Charlie Brown. And, you know, I was like, yeah, he's like, that's an awesome costume. And as me and my kids were walking away, he chased me down because I also, you know, I had like a, you know, bag too. And he's like, I got to give you this. And he gave me a rock and he put a rock actually in my bag. I'm like, that's awesome. All right. You know what? Thank you. That at least makes this costume feel like it was worth it.
But yeah, I've been more of a fan of the homemade ones myself. I've never been a big, I'm going to go spend $200 on a costume that I'm going to wear for one night, not touch. I think one of my favorite ones I did, and it was, this was a long time ago. I did like just a generic superhero type thing where I literally put on like long johns, long underwear, which is, you know, cause that's the superhero cliche. I think I took like some duct tape and made like a, I don't remember what letter I put on my chest. It might've been a J or might've been something else. And then I did like, you know, like a, you know, something over my head. What do you call it? Like a ski mask over my head of something. Some kind of generic cape. I think I used a bed sheet or a towel for the cape. I can't remember. It just looked ridiculous as heck. It was funny and it got a good laugh. And it was probably cost me like $10 or something altogether, you know, maybe $20. And it was, you know, it was a good laugh.
I think if I want a good laugh, what I like to do is I like to go into the internet browser and type in slutty costume and then just watch the whole dearth of like responses. Like, did you ever want a slutty garbage man? You got a slutty garbage man. There's a costume out there, slutty COVID. And you look at it and like, all right. And again, you're going to pay like $50 basically. Like, who sits there and says, I want to go to a party, but I just want to be slutty, but I also want to be kind of clever. You know, yeah. I get it. Like, slutty nurse. All right, fine. But like, when you have like these weird things, like, there was one that it was like slutty Harry Potter. And it's like,
Yeah, no thanks.
All right. Speaking of Harry Potter, somebody brought up on the Facebook binge mode page for the Ringer podcast. Somebody brought up a thing about Harry Potter, about how weird and odd it was that if you wanted to go to, what was the name of the town? Hogsmeade.
Yes.
Basically, you had to like fill out like a parental permission slip, but you needed no slip if you wanted to go to school and learn dangerous magic or participate in a tournament with like dangerous consequences or, you know.
Yeah, I think I saw that meme somewhere else as well where it was a list of like things you don't, you know, it was like, what was Hogwarts Logic, I think it was called.
Yep, that's it.
And it had a list of like, you know, things that, you know, things you don't need a permission slip for. And it was like, you know, participate in a deadly Triwizard tournament. You know, kids get turned to stone in the hallways, but nothing happens. Then, yeah, then the one things you do need a permission for, going to the next town over or something like that.
Just going to the town like a little, you know, ways away. And it's weird now that like Harry Potter being well over 20 years old, and I'm not talking him as the person, I'm talking like the book series and franchise. You look back at it and there is just a lot of those weird things about it. Like, as an example here, so you go to a wizarding school and essentially you learn all your stuff, but you don't go there until like what, I think you're 10 or 11 or so. So do they go to a school then to learn how to do reading or math or anything else? Is there another school that they go to that's a non-wizarding school, or are they like all homeschooled?
I would imagine they would almost have to have some of that, and they just don't talk about it in the books or movies, because who wants to watch some kid? You know, it's much more interesting watching kids go into, you know, potions class or defense against dark arts class, as opposed to they're going to math or language arts. Like, I'm sure they're there, they just aren't dwelled on at all.
But I remember, like, especially I think Goblet of Fire, they like talk about how there's like only like three or four wizarding schools over kind of in the European or over in that, you know, continent for the most part. So if there's only like that many wizarding schools, they make no mention, like, especially if you're trying to keep your existence hidden from the regular non-magic muggle community itself. So kind of a weird parallel right there where it's like, hey, you know, how are you doing with your reading today? I don't know. Just do a spell and I'll learn it, I guess. And it's just a weird aspect of that. Harry Potter in general is just weird because, what do you think? Like, do you think a school like Hogwarts had liability insurance? And if so, how high were the premiums on that?
Well, I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure it was kind of a, you know, if you send your kids, there's a waiver, I'm sure. If you send your kids to school here, then you accept all responsibility that anything crazy that happens to them is not our fault, basically. I'm sure there was something like that. Because otherwise the school would be bankrupt or whatever insurance company, you know, worked with them would be in the same shoes. So,
There's even like other weird aspects of like Hogwarts, the school itself. Like they had a giant tree that was alive and would like slam and destroy you. And a lot of it's like, do we really need that tree there? Maybe we could take it out. What if a student gets too close to it and gets killed? Like, well, magic school. Hey, what about those like woods next to Hogsworth that seems to possess nothing but a numerous amount of like dangerous creatures, animals, and races of other things? Like, hey, we got a centaurs in there and they don't like us at all. Well, it's cool. They won't kill the students, will they? Hey, we got giant spiders that apparently live in the forest, and really, what's to stop them from like trying to murder them, you know, whatsoever. So it's one of those things like when you have a series like Harry Potter, it makes a lot of sense until you like put a closer magnifying glass on it.
Yeah, I think that can be said for a lot of these franchises, you know, Star Wars, Star Trek. Once they've been out for a while, people kind of stop looking at it at face value, and you kind of get a little ways away from it. You look back at it, and you kind of read it with a different lens, and you pick up on some of this stuff, and you know, some of it's a little bit more damning than others. Some of it's just good natured fun. Like a lot of this stuff, it is what it is.
I just watched rewatched A New Hope last week, and it's still a good movie, but man, there's just a lot of weird logic issues in the movie itself. You know, like if you're going to basically try to pawn off to like the Empire that, oh, we were on a diplomatic mission, like the beginning when they stormed the ship, maybe you shouldn't shoot back at them or run away.
Well, especially now that we've gotten Rogue One, it's like, you know, we're on a diplomatic mission. It's like, I literally just saw your ship take off from this huge battle over Scarif where you stole plans. Like, really? You're going to say you're on a diplomatic mission?
Remember when you flew away from us, we had to capture and disable your ship and you were shooting at us? Yeah, it's not a diplomatic mission.
We've got it on video here.
Right. It's just this whole, like, weird movie in some ways, especially like when you get to like Mos Eisley and like the stormtroopers, as an example, they're like looking and they're knocking on doors. This one's locked. Let's move on. It's like, well, wait, wouldn't the locked door be the one you'd want to look behind? Because obviously something's behind there they don't want you to see.
Yeah. Isn't that probably the one you want to check out further?
All right. Or even just like the, like Death Star itself. Like there's a scene where I see like, Obi-Wan, he's like, you know, going through the corridors to shut down a tractor beam. And I see people walking around in the backgrounds. It's like, what, there was no cameras on the Death Star? And there was like nobody else noticing this big brown robed figure going around?
It was Jedi mind tricks the whole time.
Yep. These aren't the plot holes that you're looking for.
No, definitely not.
What else you got on deck? Anything?
No, not really. Just, you know, yeah. Living the dream or something.
Every dream's a dream until it becomes a nightmare.
True that. Quite true.
Mm-hmm. I think we're hitting the end of this episode, aren't we?
Yeah, we've been yammering on for quite a while. We could probably call it a day.
Yeah, we didn't use spooky voices all the way through.
Thank God.
Yep. It's going to be an interesting week. We got the Mandalorian starting up again this Friday.
Yeah, Mandalorian, that'll be coming out. Well, there's something else coming up pretty soon, isn't there? I thought there was something else. Maybe not. I don't know. Brain fart.
I will say the announcements, you know, quick things that, you know, have been announced. Oscar Isaacs is probably going to play Moon Knight. That's definitely an amazing thing.
That should be interesting, yes. That's a good call. I'm a big Oscar Isaacs fan.
Yep, so you got that going. Honestly, Disney Plus announced Disney executives announced a few weeks ago they're going to put all their focused energy in streaming. I almost wonder if they're going to pare down the Phase 4 for Marvel and put more content onto Disney Plus to try to keep the subscriptions high and also the budgets down, because you're not going to get the return on the theaters being the issues they are right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they're doing some kind of pivot like that with, you know, the pandemic going on. I mean, you know, who knows when Black Widow is going to come out. I mean, that might end up getting released on there as one of those premium movies like they did with Mulan. I don't know how well that went for them. But I mean, they've already got, there were what, four or five just announced that first wave. And then they had, you know, they added on the Moon Knight, She-Hulk, Miss Marvel, I think, for another wave that'll be coming, you know, who knows, probably not for another couple of years. But yeah, I think they'll definitely put more of an emphasis on that. Yeah, like you said, to keep subscriptions up, because they need to keep something on there to keep people on there. I mean, so far, I think it's just been, what, Mandalorian and maybe Hamilton from a few months ago when they put on there. And, you know, it has been a whole lot to keep people subscribed to it other than just the back catalog, which is, you know, going to get old after a bit. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Well, they are direct releasing the Pixar movie Soul on Christmas.
Or are they? No, I hadn't seen that.
Yep, they are going to do that. And that's also an interesting one, too, because Trent Reznor is doing the soundtrack for that.
Nice. That should be interesting.
Trent Reznor and Pixar. What an age we live in.
Yeah, if you had told us that, you know, 20 years ago, we would have said you were crazy.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. We do appreciate you taking the time to listen to our ramblings. And as I said, we're trying to plan something big for our next episode that will hopefully be out within the next week or two as well. But we do thank you for joining. This is one of your hosts, Mike Spraggle.
And this is still the other host, John Lundquist.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes, everybody. Have a good one.
Happy Halloween.
Oh, yeah.